Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and thanks for tuning in once again to Enterprise Radio here on EP. And if you're not already connected with us on our various social media outlets, we invite you to do so by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all at ePodcast Network. Today, we're speaking with Justin Hartenstein, founder and director of development of Oracle Lighting, which has been a leader in the aftermarket automotive lighting industry since 1999. Mr. Hartenstein, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning. Happy to be here.
Good morning to you, and looking forward to hearing from you in all regards. So tell us, for starters, what types of products and services does Oracle Lighting offer?
Yeah, so here at Oracle Lighting, we develop solid-state LED lighting solutions, mainly for the automotive aftermarket, as you mentioned, but we're also a Tier 1 supplier for OE manufacturers in the automotive industry, as well as the heavy equipment, material handling, and marine industries as well. Some of our most interesting projects that we're currently working on are technically under NDA, so I can't go into great detail, but we're working with a handful of supercar manufacturers on some very cutting-edge developments that they are going to be releasing as concept cars in the next year or so. So we've been working with their teams to have our lighting reflect their kind of forward-thinking designs. And, you know, as an engineer, these are obviously the projects that myself and my team really enjoy working on. And working with other manufacturers is always productive for us because we can draw inspiration from these very ambitious designs and turn around and redirect that inspiration flow into our own product development. But to get back to your original question, Oracle Lighting, we're probably best known for our automotive aftermarket products that we produce, custom LED lighting for headlights, taillights, off-road LED lighting, accessory lights, and so on. We've got a pretty wide range of products and applications. And, you know, over the years, some of our customers include guys like LeBron James, Shaquille O'Neal, Usain Bolt, Floyd Mayweather, and, you know, of course, we've been involved in some high-profile vehicle builds that were featured in magazines, TV shows, and, you know, the SEMA show, of course, which for your non-automotive industry listeners is basically like the Super Bowl for the automotive aftermarket industry.
And you got to love that good stuff, and a great place to kick things off here today. Tell us also, how did Oracle grow to be an industry leader with customers around the world?
Well, I can't say it was the overnight success that many people seem to assume. I've got to give you a little bit of context, so bear with me. I mean, when I first started out, I honestly didn't even have the intention to build a business. You know, I didn't go out and pitch my idea and try to get startup capital like a lot of entrepreneurs do. 20 years ago, I simply had an interest in automobiles and electronics. And at the time, I was in college studying to be an engineer. And, you know, I would often basically build parts that I wanted to use for my own vehicle. And that wasn't because I, you know, necessarily was trying to be creative. It was because my car would break a lot. And being a broke college student, I kind of had to figure out a way to fix these things on my own. So back in 99, the internet was really barely a thing. And there were really just these online message boards where you go and talk about cars. And I had posted some photos of this lighting product that I had sort of designed and put together and put in my vehicle. And again, it was out of necessity then that I had built this. And almost immediately someone contacted me wanting to buy the lights from me. And I didn't have any intention of selling them. I needed them. it was headlights in this case. So I needed them for the vehicle, but I thought about it for a little while, and I figured if there was a way that I could sell that, you know, prototype model that I built and get enough money so I could buy enough parts to create another set for myself and build another set to sell, then maybe there was something there. So sure enough, I sold that set of lights. I built two more, sold those two, built four more, sold those four, built eight more. And kind of through the power of the early internet, that's how the business was born. And from day one, the business was really, it was profitable without any sort of outside capital. You know, the term organic growth is thrown around a lot in business. It's one of those buzzwords. But, you know, this was kind of textbook organic growth strategy that was, I don't want to say accidentally implemented, but it ended up being a really good way for the business to start, because without any investors, there was no pressure to overextend myself. For the first few years, I wore most of the hats, so we worked with very low overhead, and we were always profitable. And, this method of sort of sustained growth, which eventually over, the past two decades now, systematically built momentum and sort of snowballed to where we stand today.
Certainly do appreciate the highlights there, and it certainly is a big help as well. Now, we have a lot of entrepreneurs tuning in around the world, folks with a lot of great ideas. Tell us, what's the first step in creating a new product? I'd love to hear your input on that.
Well, it's going to be different for each industry, so I'll try to keep it broad. But really, the first step to product development is normally going to be identification, or what I call identification. And for our products that we sell here, don't get me wrong, the vast majority of our products are a want and not a need. So we usually start with some basic market research. We want to make sure that we're pursuing something that's going to be viable. So a valuable tool that we use is our trade organization. As a member, our trade organization provides us with detailed data in the form of market research reports. And so regardless of what industry you're in, if you're a member of a trade organization in that particular industry, they should be able to provide you with some sort of research data that can help you with this process. So in this hypothetical case, let's say we're going to start by examining North American vehicle sales data. Now, an outsider may look at the sales data and focus on the vehicles with the highest gross sales, because more vehicles means more potential customers. But that's not necessarily the case. When we look at it, we want to focus on vehicles that have the highest level of what we call enthusiast owners. For example, let's say the Toyota Camry is the most popular vehicle in the United States. And that's great, but not many Camry owners are what we call enthusiasts. So that means they're less likely to spend money on aftermarket parts to increase the performance or update the styling of their vehicle. So we can't really rely solely on market reports. We have to go out and collect additional data to identify really what's going to be our target markets and what areas we should best focus on. And, again, we're talking about the automotive market in this example, but you should be able to take this methodology and really apply it to any other industry.
I'd say that's some awesome and great input there. Thanks for that. Today we're joined by Justin Hartenstein, founder and director of development of Oracle Lighting, which has been a leader in the aftermarket automotive lighting industry since 1999 here on Enterprise Radio, a part of EP and the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, Justin, once you've determined a market you want to pursue, what is the next step?
Okay, so in this example we're just discussing, we've done our research, we've done our due diligence, we've determined which markets are viable for us to invest in product development. Now we have to do the fun part, which is the creativity and innovation to try to bring a product to market. So our challenge at Oracle Lighting is that we need to create a demand. We're developing products that consumers didn't even know they needed until we show it to them. So again, this is a want, not a need. So we have to create a solution to a problem that prospective customers don't even know that they have. And so the easiest way to do this is to improve on an existing system weakness. So in our case, the lighting system on a vehicle, we need to sort of find weaknesses in the lighting system on the vehicles that we've identified and then improve on those systems. So we just wrapped up a project where we identified a vehicle that was through our market research, we determined was a good candidate to provide products on. Then we found a weakness in it that the cargo area, when you open the back of the SUV, the cargo area is very dimly lit. You really can't see anything. So instead of trying to increase the output of the existing lighting, we integrated a lighting module into an existing panel that happened to be in a good position, that it really wasn't an optimal place to really fill the back area with light. So that was a way to sort of solve a problem that the vehicle came from the factory with. But in a lot of cases, maybe, you know, these are rather well-engineered systems. There's a lot of people working on these vehicles to make sure that the lighting is adequate. So if we're in a case where we can't find an area where we can improve on, then maybe we take technology or a system from a high-end luxury vehicle and find a way to apply that into a middle market vehicle as some sort of an upgrade. So just because the existing technology is there, that doesn't mean that there's necessarily not room for improvement. And again, you know, these are automotive products, but you should be able to take this same idea and apply it to different industries as well.
Now, building innovative ideas takes creativity, of course. Any tips on increasing one's creativity?
Sure, yeah. I mean, creativity and innovation, I mean, these can be difficult concepts to summon, like on demand. You're going to have a hard time if you try to sit down and just come up with the next big thing. It's just, it's not going to happen. So, you know, many people just kind of starting off as entrepreneurs or inventors, they think that these ideas come in like a eureka moment, you know, like a cartoon where the character has a light bulb pop up over their head. Inspiration, I mean, it usually comes at really odd times and in very unexpected ways. So you just have to be paying attention because it's not going to come when you're expecting it. One thing you could do to sort of foster an environment of creativity in your own mind, for example, if you're hitting a mental roadblock, you could simply walk away from the problem or walk away from the project and do some physical activity. I mean, I find physical activity has a great effect on me. It has a chemical effect on your brain. It releases endorphins and serotonin. These things can reduce stress. You know, it gives you a general feeling of well-being. And, you know, it actually increases blood flow to your brain, which, you know, if you're trying to break through a mental block, that's a good thing to have. And, I mean, honestly, for me, some of my best ideas really have come to me while I'm at the gym. So I can say from my personal experience, that works. Another little hack, you know, that I could recommend is simply changing up your routine. We're all kind of creatures of habit, and we're comfortable doing the same thing every day. And breaking away from that routine is actually hard work. So the reason I'm suggesting to do it is, again, for me personally, when I'm in a routine where I'm doing the same thing every day, my mind kind of defaults to an autopilot mode. I'm just in cruise control. I'm going through the motions, and my mind is just idling. I'm not using my brain to its full potential. So by changing up your routine, it doesn't have to be anything complicated. You know, an easy way is just to maybe take a new route to work on your morning commute. And I know it sounds kind of pointless, but there's actually some science behind my suggestion. When you change up your routine, you're basically introducing new stimuli. And when you introduce new stimuli, what happens is synapses in your brain start firing faster as different stimuli is being introduced. So you're kind of revving up your mind and firing things up a bit before you start your day. And the way I see it, an active mind is a creative mind.
Justin, can't thank you enough for joining us here today. I'm sure you've inspired and motivated quite a few folks, no doubt about that. What advice, as we conclude today, would you give to any entrepreneur just starting out?
Well, if I was starting today in 2020 from scratch with a blank slate, no capital, my focus would be on what I refer to as micro markets and really the development of a niche product that solves a problem for a concentrated group of people. I think that's really kind of the key is, you know, just today in 2020, we've got ways to communicate with customers that's very different. For example, there's a Facebook group for basically any type of interest, passion, hobby, you name it. And so each one of these online groups, I see them as essentially their own micro market. And, you know, maybe you share these interests. You know, it would be good if you did because you probably have more input, but maybe you don't. And either way, I think it's an opportunity. In these groups, the market research is basically done for you. It doesn't take much searching to find a post in one of these groups that says something like, I wish someone would make a blank, or wouldn't it be great if blank? And, you know, you can, as an entrepreneur or someone with a business mind, you can look at this and see the opportunity there where, you know, maybe many people in this group don't see the opportunity or don't want to make the product themselves. So I'm not suggesting, you know, that you're not suggesting that you're doing anything sneaky here, but it's you're basically the focus group is there for you. They're providing all the information and they're providing all the market research data. It's there. It seems like easy pickings. And then once you determine a product that you need, you already have the group to market to right there. So it makes it really easy. They tell you the product you need, they give you the market research, and then there are also a collective group of people that you could turn around and market the product to. And if done right, in a perfect scenario, you'd even be able to take pre-orders on the product to fund the production and have almost zero out-of-pocket expense. So, I think that's a huge opportunity. And another outlet that's rather new is what we're communicating through today in the podcast format. That there's so many podcasts now, the subject matter is getting very specific. And if you identify your micro-market and a certain podcast they may listen to, you could potentially sponsor that podcast. And if you've done your homework and you've identified the demographic properly, then it's going to be money well spent for marketing. And, you know, lastly, what you see today is there is a massive collective of what, you know, what we call influencers, and there's influencers for basically any industry and any niche. So back when I started my business, there was no such thing as an influencer. This whole concept has become a very effective way for small startups to get their products in front of people. And a lot of these influencers, especially if it's a very niche product, and maybe they don't need to have a huge following, but you're just trying to get the product in front of a few thousand people, they'll film an open box or product demo video for YouTube or post your product like in use on their Instagram account, sometimes at no cost, just for in exchange for the free product, or maybe a small fee if they have a large following. But I see these all as really opportunities for young entrepreneurs, for small startups, to get their products out there. And really, if you've done your homework and identified your potential customer base, and that you know that they follow these influencers, my only advice is you better have inventory on hand, because orders are definitely going to come in.
Tremendous information shared here today. And again, I know you've motivated quite a few folks with the information you've shared here today. Mr. Hartenstein, if listeners wanted to get more information on Oracle Lighting or to be in touch, where's the best place online to do so?
Sure, yeah. You can follow us on social media at Oracle Lights, OracleLights. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and, of course, our YouTube channel as well.
Easy enough. Again, Justin, all the best, and thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio. Certainly was our pleasure.
All right. Thank you.
And you're more than welcome anytime. We've been speaking with Justin Hartenstein, founder and director of development of Oracle Lighting, which has been a leader in the aftermarket automotive lighting industry since 1999. And for all the details, visit OracleLights.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune in to our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.